Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Reform or Revolution is a short but highly influential Marxist polemic by Rosa Luxemburg, first published in 1900. Written in the context of debates inside the German Social Democratic Party, the book directly challenges Eduard Bernstein and other revisionists who argued that capitalism could be gradually transformed into socialism through parliamentary reform and trade union activity alone. Luxemburg's purpose is not simply to defend revolution as an abstract ideal. She wants to show that reformism changes the goal of socialist politics, weakens working-class independence, and misunderstands how capitalist power actually operates. The book belongs to political theory and socialist criticism, but it is also a practical intervention aimed at labor movements, party organizers, and readers interested in the limits of gradual change under capitalism. Its enduring value comes from the clarity of its argument reforms matter. But without revolutionary strategy, they remain limited and fragile. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, why Luxemburg rejects the idea that capitalism can peacefully become socialism. The central argument of reform or revolution is that Bernstein's reformist theory mistakes temporary adjustments in capitalism for a real transformation of the system. Luxemburg does not deny that reforms can improve wages, rights, or working conditions. What she rejects is the claim that these improvements can accumulate into socialism without a break in the capitalist structure. Her reasoning is that capitalism is not a neutral system that gradually softens into equality. It remains based on class power, profit, and recurring crisis. Reforms may redistribute pressure, but they do not remove the underlying conflict between labor and capital. This distinction is essential because Luxemburg sees reformism as turning a strategy of struggle into a substitute for emancipation. In her view, if socialism is reduced to small gains within existing institutions, the socialist movement stops preparing workers to govern society themselves. The book therefore defines reform not as a false enemy, but as something incomplete that only makes sense when tied to a revolutionary horizon. Secondly, the critique of Parliament as a limited arena for working-class power, Luxemburg's critique of Parliament, is one of the book's most important institutional arguments. She does not treat parliamentary activity as useless, but she insists that Parliament cannot be the main site where socialism is built. Her view is that Parliament belongs to the capitalist state and reflects its balance of forces, rather than standing above society as a fully neutral body. Because of this, legislative reform can expand certain rights without changing who actually controls production and social power. Luxemburg argues that reformists overestimate what parliamentary democracy can accomplish when they imagine that legal changes alone will steadily dissolve class domination. The result is a politics that becomes increasingly dependent on negotiation with bourgeois interests and increasingly detached from mass working-class self-activity. For Luxemburg, democracy matters, but its formal procedures are not enough if economic power remains concentrated in private hands. This helps explain why the book treats parliamentary reform as limited by structure, not merely by bad leadership or lack of will. The problem is not that elections should be ignored, but that they cannot replace a strategy aimed at changing the state and society together. Thirdly, mass strikes and class struggle as the engine of revolutionary development. Although reform or revolution is best known as a critique of Bernstein, it also advances a positive theory of how socialist politics develops. Luxemburg emphasizes mass struggle, including strikes and popular mobilization, as the force that educates and strengthens the working class. She sees these struggles not only as instruments for demanding better conditions, but as moments in which workers learn collective discipline, political confidence, and the limits of compromise. This is why later readers connect the book to her broader theory of the mass strike. The key point is that working-class power does not emerge from institutions alone. It grows through active conflict that transforms people from petitioners into participants. Luxemburg believes that such Sangharshas generate political consciousness more effectively than abstract propaganda or electoral routine. They also reveal the social power of workers in a way that parliamentary maneuvering cannot. In this framework, reform struggles are valuable when they sharpen organization and deepen revolutionary understanding, not when they become an end in themselves. The book therefore links immediate demands with long-term transformation, showing how everyday conflict can prepare a movement for larger change. Fourthly, reforms as trials of freedom rather than freedom itself. One of Luxemburg's most enduring formulations is that reforms are trials of freedom rather than freedom itself. This idea captures her belief that partial gains have real value, but only as tests of how much democratic power workers can exercise and defend. Reforms can open space for organization, speech bargaining, and political education. They can also expose the limits of the existing order, because every concession made by capital is conditional and reversible. Luxemburg's point is that the socialist movement should not confuse access with emancipation. A better law or stronger union recognition may improve life, but it does not resolve the deeper question of who controls social production and political authority. This is why she insists that reforms should be used strategically, not celebrated as final victories. They are important because they train the class in struggle, but dangerous if they produce satisfaction with the existing system. The concept remains useful because it avoids two extremes at once: dismissing reforms as irrelevant on the one hand, or treating them as the whole meaning of socialism on the other. Luxembourg preserves the practical importance of reform while refusing to let it replace revolutionary purpose. Lastly, the book's continuing relevance for debates about reformism and left strategy, reform or revolution, remains influential because its questions have not disappeared. Contemporary debates about social democracy, labor politics, electoral left projects, and union strategy still turn on the same issue. Luxembourg confronted, can capitalism be humanized enough to lose its exploitative character? Or do reforms remain unstable unless backed by organized power from below? The book speaks to readers who want a serious critique of reformism without abandoning immediate struggles. Its value lies in showing that the tension between short-term gains and long-term transformation is not accidental, but built into political strategy itself. Luxembourg helps explain why movements can win improvements and still fail to shift the system, especially when their organizations become tied to existing institutions. The book is also useful because it combines theoretical clarity with practical orientation. It is not a detached academic text. It is a strategic argument about what socialist movements must preserve if they want reforms to lead somewhere. Compared with broader introductions to Marxism, it stands out for its directness and precision. Compared with later political commentaries, it remains distinctive because it addresses reformism at the level of first principles rather than just electoral tactics. In conclusion, Reform or Revolution should be read by students of political theory, labor organizers, socialists, historians of Marxism, and anyone trying to understand the limits of gradual change under capitalism. Its main benefit is analytical rather than inspirational. It forces readers to separate real improvements from structural transformation and to ask whether reform strengthens or dilutes collective power for readers interested in unions, parliamentary politics, or social democratic strategy. The book offers a clear framework for thinking about how movements can win concessions without losing their larger purpose. For readers approaching Luxembourg for the first time, it is one of her most accessible and focused works because the argument is compact and sharply organized around a single dispute. What makes it stand out from similar books in the socialist canon is its balance of seriousness and practicality. Luxembourg does not reject reforms, but she refuses to let them replace revolution. That combination gives the book an unusual durability. It remains relevant wherever progressive politics risks becoming detached from the deeper question of power. As a result, it is both a historical document and a still useful guide to strategic thinking. If you would like to support Rosa Luxembourg, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.